here in the Summer Hall courtyard, and the person I'm about to speak to is not actually performing here, but it's a good place to do an interview. I'm here with Jack Holden, and he's bringing awkward conversations with animals I fucked to the underbelly. And Jack, first question, it's probably going to reveal something to the people listening, but it's a creative question, really. Can you build a bridge in your development as a performer, a writer, from kind of your final curtain in Warhorse to arriving at the underbelly with this particular show?
I think I finished Warhorse some time ago now, and that was sort of my first year out of drama school, and it was a massive learning curve for me, performing in front of a huge number of people every night and maintaining a show over a long period, and a show that was much, much bigger than just me, and it had these enormous puppets in, and the vista of the whole show is enormous. And since then, I suppose I've wanted to strip back to the real coalface of acting, really, and that's what I've been able to do with this. And I know the writer, and he's a tremendous young writer. He's called Rob Hayes, and he's had a couple of plays published already. This is his third play to go into publication. And I read this play, and I read it immediately again because I just loved it so much. And it was so madcap and off the wall, but still had heart, which perfectly encapsulates Rob himself, knowing him very well. And I knew I just had to do it, really.
But in some ways, you know, it could feel like a retreat from that mass audience to, you know, a solo show, or it could be the thing everybody should do if they're ever in a big show, is to go and do a solo show.
Yes, I think maybe it comes from a complex where I thought I was playing the lead character, but actually everyone looks at the horses because they are so majestic and well-built. So, but I don't think it truly comes from her. I think it comes from Warhorse is such a visual, quite cinematic show, really. And the reason I love monologues, this is my second one now, is just that it's your complete control and delivery of a piece of text, and it's a relationship with the audience that is so unique and so micro compared to the massive scale of a 1,100 seater.
So you graduate and then you go into, you know, a big show. So what were the main things that you've taken from that experience that you're actually harvesting on stage here?
Technical skills definitely carry from there. The vocal resilience and physical endurance that I built up over that definitely, you know, allow me a certain strength that has allowed me to perform monologues. And also repeating something that many times. I performed Warhorse over 300 times. I think anything short of 300 now seems very easy, and I can keep it fresh very easily, and I learn skills and tools for how to keep it as fresh as possible.
So coming on to this particular show, has the writer been involved in this at all?
Yes, Rob actually put the play, it's five scenes, and he put each one up onto his website, where he publishes a lot of his plays for free for people to read as he wrote them episodically. And then he conflated the whole thing into a play, and that draft is very different to the draft that's on stage now. And it changed through a process of the director, Edward Stambalouian, getting involved, and then bringing me into the room. And as much as I fit to the dialogue, Rob has fit the dialogue to me, which is a great feeling.
So now you're up here, though. Has the writer let go of it?
Yes, he has, actually. He gave me a card on opening night which said, "These are your words now, do with them what you will." By which I assume he means, still say my words, but do it in your own way. So yes, he's definitely let go, and he's very good at that, actually, and he's very open to suggestions if I feel that something is not quite working. But generally, I trust Rob so much that I do go with his instinct, usually.
Now, don't give too much away, but just a little bit about what the show's about.
The show is a coming-of-age story of a pretty sad guy who really should have come of age earlier, but he's been rejected by humans for most of his life, and so he turns to the animal kingdom for love and affection and support, and he finds it to a degree, but he doesn't really consider the consequences, and things start to go a little bit wrong. It's a really unexpected tale. I think the title is very facetious, obviously, but the story actually has a lot of heart.
Can you take us into one of your rehearsals?
Well, we tried not to do too much research. We tried to imagine more than we needed to look at in the world of bestiality. But Edward Stambolian, the director, is very hot on improvisation and games and rehearsal through play. So we'd improvise a lot of the previous circumstances and a lot of the childhood of this character, which is quite important to the action of the play. And so a lot of play, and then we got on to the real nitty-gritty of getting the text down.
And so when you're in that rehearsal room again, was the writer gone by then or rewriting?
No, Rob was there. He came in and out. He gave us space when we needed it, and then towards the end he came back in and saw what we'd done with his text and realised that he could actually get away with a lot less text than he had put in there. I think he said himself that he sort of didn't realise what an actor could bring to it in a way. He was sort of overwritten in a way, and he didn't realise that an actor could do a lot of the work his words are doing without speaking words. So he was able to cut a lot of it. But we still fill the same amount of time. It's just there's more silence and we can see thoughts land with a bit more space.
And what are you learning about yourself as a solo performer then?
I got to the end of the show a couple of nights ago and I had a sort of momentous point where I looked at the audience and I thought, wow, I've just been speaking at you for an hour and you've listened. That's very kind of you. And it's a really, really special, unique relationship. People have asked me whether I miss acting with other actors, and I do. I really can't wait to act with other people again. But equally, the relationship you have with an audience is so interactive, and there's absolutely no fourth wall. There can't be, because you need the audience so much on your side and to warm to you and to support you. Otherwise, you're not going to get through it. So that's what I love about it, is just that I've really, really, really learnt to appreciate my audience.
Now, I ask this question to a lot of solo performers of different ages at the Fringe here. In those 5 minutes before you're on, how does the actor prepare?
I prepare by trying to shake out a lot of nerves in whatever physical way I can. I do a lot of vocal warm-ups, diction warm-ups, because I need to get my mouth around a lot of words and speak uninterrupted for an hour. And then it's just about trusting that I do know the words and I won't forget them, and which is the underpinning fear in those 5 minutes before you go on, and just not allowing yourself to run lines and work yourself into nerves by that. Just trusting in all the work we've done, and trusting that moment to moment I'll be there and the words will come and the moments will come.
This is a very intense run-up here of show after show after show, and even sitting here in the Summerhall courtyard earlier, a cast clearly had just come off the stage and got notes from the director that lasted about an hour. And I've also just recently in a different courtyard overheard a director who's clearly stuck to the solo performer like glue, you know, constant dialogue and, you know, micro-analysing the whole thing. And I just thought, you poor bastard to the performer. But in terms of the play evolving here, who's giving you notes?
My director, Edward Stambolian, is giving me notes, but what he's mainly doing is giving me thoughts and little ideas and bits of guidance rather than micromanagement, like you said. It's he's given me a lot of thoughts for the day and points of concentration, things to focus on for today that I might not have been quite near enough yesterday. And that's a really nice way to do it, because it doesn't feel like things have gone wrong. It feels like things can only get better in a way.
And you know, classic brickbats and bouquets, good and bad. What are your notes to yourself, having just done a couple of shows so far? One thing good and one thing bad that you're working on.
One thing good is I'm not indulging myself in pauses or laughs or time I'm pushing on, which is always good, which is something that even the best of actors can slip into, is just sluggishness and allowing the pauses to grow and grow and grow. A bad thing, I'm probably those 5 minutes before, I'm probably not dampening the nerves enough, and I'm not focusing on my game enough. So I need to attack the very beginning of the play with more presence and gusto, I think.
Final question, Jack. What's next on your journey?
Next on my journey is a bit of a break, because this is a one-man show. I did a one-man show directly before this, and then I did a play in the Bristol Old Vic directly before that. So I've had quite a good run of back-to-back stuff. So I'm going to take a little break. And then I'm probably going to tour the one-man show I did before this one, called Johnny Got His Gun, to theatres across the UK.
Jack Holden, on a journey and solo show here at the Edinburgh Fringe. Thanks very much.